is from the book of Ephesians chapter 5. It can be found on page 1177 in the church Bibles. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning at verse 1. Therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children, and walk in love as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. But sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not even be named among you, as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place. But instead, let there be thanksgiving. For you may be sure of this, that everyone who is sexually immoral or impure, or who is covetous, that is, an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not associate with them, for at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light, for the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, "Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you." Look then carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, making melody to the Lord with all your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ.
Louise, thanks very much. And Tim, thank you so much for inviting me here today. I mean, it's one of those days you don't want to miss if you possibly can avoid. It's fantastic to be here. Thank you. And what a great passage to be reading on a day like this. I mean, let me focus you on verse 8 as we begin. At one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. And the New Testament can be very black and white, can't it? Sometimes that can be frustrating for us if our experience of conversion, say, is rather grey. I was hearing someone the other day, and they were telling me about their parents were Christian. They said, I never knew a time when I wasn't Christian. And they've a genuine living faith. You think of the people who, they can't tell you any date when anything happened as far as they can remember. I could work out the date when I became a Christian, but I'd have to work it out because it was so undramatic. I just knelt by my bed in my student bed, sit, prayed. The first thing I did as a Christian was to get into bed and fall asleep. And yet it was the start of something. Some months later, I had to ask someone, you know, have there been any differences in my life? It was a great relief when they'd actually seen some that I hadn't noticed them. Or I think of someone else who got converted and a week later went back to the friend who led him to the Lord and said, it doesn't work. And I said, what do you mean it doesn't work? He said, well, it doesn't work. I became a Christian a week ago and now I find I've started swearing. I mean, I don't seem to be able to stop. He said, what do you mean you started swearing? You always swore like a trooper. You see, what was actually a sign of life, the Spirit making him aware of his sinfulness, he'd seen as a sign of death, that he was getting worse now he was converted. There's a whole spectrum, isn't there? At the other end, I think of an old friend who was a Butlin's red coat, an alcoholic, got converted. He said, from that day on, I've never wanted to taste another drop of drink. At one time you were darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Dark, light, error, truth, evil, righteousness. You were darkness, you are light. But you notice the focus is not on a decisive moment, but on a decisive change. And he doesn't even say you were in darkness. He says you were darkness. It's not some, be careful, it's dark out there. No, it's you were dark. We were contagious ourselves. And he doesn't say you are in the light. No, you are light. And you let that sink in and you say, well, how wonderful, you must be fantastic. No, you are light in the Lord, in union with, in relationship with Jesus. You're light. I'm perfect? No. Now you notice what the next sentence says. Walk as children of the light. And some people love black and white, don't they? Others instinctively search instantly for the grey. Well, this, if you like, is the grey. You were darkness, you are light, walk as children of the light. Live who you are. Reconcile the mismatch between the fact that you're light and how you actually walk and live. Walk as children of the light. In New Testament ethics, again and again, we're told to look at what God has done for us and then live who you are. Actually, we so often don't do that. We look for God and say, earn what you could be. At one time, you were darkness. Now, you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light. And the apostle writes this at the end of a long list of examples of what it means to move from being darkness to being light. And if I have understood it right, and you've been working your way through Ephesians, you've worked your way through these. They're there in chapter 4, aren't they? Verse 25, put away falsehood, speak truth. Verse 28, no longer steal, but work and share with the needy. Verse 31, put away malice, be kind to one another. What different worlds. Darkness and light. And the list is rounded off as he comes into chapter 5 with sex. There in verses 3 to 7. Well, of course, we live in a sex-obsessed world. What difference does darkness and light make here? I remember a bishop once saying to me, the modern world is obsessed by sex. We need to talk about other things. And I can remember sort of in a rather fumbly way trying to say to him, yes, the ancient world was obsessed by sex as well, but as a matter of fact. And we have got other things to talk about completely. But if we say nothing about sex, we're really saying the gospel has nothing to say on one of the issues that matters most to the world around us. And only then, of course, you read what the apostle actually does have to say. I mean, look at verse 3. But sexual immorality and all impurity and covetousness mustn't even be named among you, as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. Oh, you thought at last we were going to face the issue, and now it seems to be saying the church is to be a sex-free zone. You can't even mention it. Now that's not really to understand him right. He's not saying we should be prudish. He's not saying darkness talks about it, knows it, and faces up to sex, and light should just blush and ignore it and have an awkward, embarrassed silence. No, he says, actually, here's a subject where we should be full of thanksgiving. And he hasn't changed the subject when he comes about thanksgiving. He's not saying in a darkness sings sex and light sings a chorus. He's saying light thanks God, says sex is a wonderful gift. Light knows that, enjoys that, wants to keep sex as a wonderful gift, so it doesn't cheapen it. It doesn't soil it. It's not full of smutty jokes and titillating stories. It wants to say, thank God for the gift of sex. I can remember one of my early ventures as a young Christian trying to walk as children of the light on the team coach back from an away match, sort of stuck in traffic around London, and someone started the dirty joke routine, and I knew quite a few jokes at that stage, and I remember resolving, every time they tell a dirty joke, I'm going to tell a clean one. And for 45 minutes, they told dirty jokes and I told the clean one. And by the end of 45 minutes, my clean ones were getting less and less funny. I didn't have anything else left to say. And finally, after 45 minutes of this, someone said, Hugh, why don't you tell dirty jokes? And that's when I went all embarrassed and awkward. I just said, well, I don't really know any. I've never worked harder for an opening for the gospel and blown it more completely. You were darkness. Now you're light. And it's not just to do with talk, it's mind space as well. Don't fill your mind space with the wrong sort of sex. Well, verse 3 talks about sexual immorality and all impurity. Or, were you struck by that? Covetousness suddenly creeps in. You know, what's covetousness doing here? Well, you remember the Ten Commandments? You shall not covet. Remember what you shall not covet? You shall not covet your neighbor's house or your neighbor's wife. It's the sexual as well as material covetousness, wanting what is not yours. And by verse 5, the covetousness has made someone an idolater. It's become a god to us. Pornography fits that bill so well. It gets a grip on lives and dominates them. I remember speaking with one of the leading mission agencies in this country, the leader of it, and we asked him and we said, what's the biggest reason why people have to come home early from the mission field? And without hesitating, without even drawing breath, he just said pornography. And it isn't just a male problem. A medic said to me that actually it affects the brain's wiring. It sets a pattern that very quickly means you start thinking down those lines. It's why it becomes an addictive behavior. Pornography doesn't leave you with a level playing field. Everyone does it. What's the harm, we say? And God says, verse 6, let no one deceive you with empty words. The apostle says, for because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. We can't live in God's world, twist and trash God's good gifts, and not be held accountable, not face his righteous anger. That's true for sexual lives as well as every other part of our lives. You were darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of the Lord. Show, verse 9, the fruit of the light. Positively, verse 10, do what is pleasing to the Lord. Negatively, verse 11, have no part in darkness. See, what does it mean to walk as children of the light? Well, it means in the sexual areas of our life, it's to be joy, not smart. Now, we expect that. What comes next doesn't spring to our mind as part of discipleship in the same way. But it matters as much to the apostle. He moves from talking about sex to talking about time. And if in one place he's saying, look, sex, that should be something of joy, not smut. Here he's saying about time, be wise, not foolish. Can you remember back to the days when you lived at home and you headed out the door for a night out and your mother's voice just shouted as you were going through the door, be careful, dear. You know, and you rolled your eyes because you're full of excitement and want to enjoy the moment, and she's just full of warnings and sucking the fun out of life, or at least that's how it felt. Be careful, dear. Make the most of the opportunity. Live life to the full. Seize the day. You know, if you're old enough to remember Robin Williams and the Dead Poets Society, it's carpe diem. And the apostle rolls both those things together here. Did you spot it? In verse 15, be very careful. Look carefully how you walk. Verse 17, make the most of every opportunity, the best use of the time. Literally, buying up the time. Now, forgive me, just a couple of minutes of elementary Greek, just to show I do still know elementary Greek, even if I don't go better than that. Time, you see here, it's not clock watching, it's opportunity taking. That's what he's talking about. Greek's got two words for time. One is chronos. We get our word chronology from it. And that's really the interval of time. You know, there are 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week. It's time as a dominating factor. You've got to put in the time. Can I get this done on time? The working week and overtime. Those kind of language, that's chronos. There's another word, kairos, which has got the sense of opportunity. The fit time, the right time, the God-given opportunity. See, I can look at today and chronos tells me it's the 2nd of July 2017. That's the date, that's the time. Kairos tells me it's a day to tell the gospel. It's an opportunity. And you chase chronos, you know, you are clock watching, time catches up on you, time flies, all those kinds of things. Interruptions are always a nuisance, aren't they? But you look for kairos, the opportunity. You pick up the phone to discover if the interruption's a nuisance or an opportunity. And Paul says, be wise. Verse 15, look carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise. See, not as... It's not to do with how busy you are, it's to do whether you're an opportunity taker or not. We don't think of wisdom that way, do we? But God does. For us, the wise people, we're looking for the letters after their name. I've got a youth worker, he's a great youth worker back in London. And remember interviewing for the job, remember seeing his CV, and you ask them for qualifications because we all think, you know, that's matters about wisdom. His qualification column was very empty. He left school at 16 without any, did his first job as a brickie and his second job helping in a care home. Actually, he's very wise. He's very wise in a whole host of ways, but he's very wise in this sense as well. He was telling me the other day about how he plans out his time. He thinks about it, you know, what he's going to do through a year. He said, no, I've got slots. I know that that's when I prep this stuff. That's when I'm doing that stuff. That's when I'm thinking of these. I think about it in the week. I think about it about a day. I know when I'm wanting to look. I've got a chance. I can read there. I can listen to something on this point. I'll do some work. I'll see people over there. And yet he's still flexible. In fact, he can be flexible because he's already worked out how to make the most of time if the day doesn't have an interruption. The interruption comes now. Is this a nuisance or is this an opportunity? Make the most of the time. Make the most of the time because the days are evil, he says, verse 16. We think the days are normal because they're what we're used to. God says they're evil. It's not a comparison. Not first century Ephesus was so terrible compared with 21st century Sheffield. It's that the way society shapes its ways is actually under God's judgment. Always is. We think they're normal because they're what we're used to. It's how you do it. At least that's how we've been brought up. God says they're evil. Therefore, don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And the cost of making the most of every opportunity is to look carefully. And nothing is more important than discerning God's will. Not discerning God's will so much in what job do you take and who do you marry, but it's in character making. What's the godly way to respond to this? This is much more to do with character making than time management. But the disciple takes the opportunities. When it comes to time, we're wise, not foolish. And the challenge for Christchurch Central, isn't it, is now we've got a new build. How do we make the most of the new opportunities? If you're not asking that question, if you don't get wise in answering that question, well, where's the new build going to get us? Sex? Yeah, it's joy, not smut. Time? Be wise, not foolish. Here's one last area he drops in. Life. You want life? Look to the spirit, not wine. I said spirit, singular, with a capital S, not spirits, little s. And look, verse 18. Don't get drunk with wine, for that's debauchery. That's wild, uncontrolled actions. That's the city centre on a Friday or a Saturday night, unless for some reason Sheffield city centre is different from every other one I've come across. That's when people are on the razzle getting plastered and all that follows from it. You know, a night to forget if you can remember it. Alcohol-related illnesses. I don't know what the NHS savings would be, but it's in millions and millions if you could remove those. Alcohol-fueled crime. Massive. Instead, but rather than being drunk with wine, be filled with the Spirit. Yeah. So many people, if they want a good time, they're reaching for a bottle. In fact, they can't imagine a good time that doesn't include reaching for a bottle. The real stimulant, though, is the Spirit. He's the one who brings life. He's the one who makes us more human, not less. And when the Spirit fills a life, you discover people matter. And these Spirit-filled people that Paul is writing of here, you see, they are in verse 19 addressing one another. They're speaking to one another. The Colossian parallel of this passage talks about teaching and admonishing one another. And we say, help, look, I can't do that. What am I meant to say to the people around me? Who am I to say it? Well, don't worry. Here's one way. You're addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Spirit-filled singers are not always eyes closed, praising God in some spiritual ecstasy. They can just as often be eyes open, singing gospel truths to one another. It's why the words of our songs matter. Because that's what we're doing a lot of the time when we sing. Spirit-filled community is helping, encouraging, setting back on track, keeping each other going community. And Christchurch Central needs to be that even more than it needs a new building. Singing and making melody to the Lord with all your heart, which is a great line to have in if you're a tuneless singer like me, means we can at least do that while we wait for our new creation voice, which I hope will be better tuned. Now, people matter. God is praised. Verse 20, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. You see, the God who gives is the God who motivates, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. That is a rare mark of any community, submitting to one another. We prayed earlier about Grenfell Tower and that dreadful fire there, and the media have had a field day ever since on it. And, you know, the way the media work, they have to kind of keep finding new stories, new angles, push everything as far as it can. They're not getting everything right about Grenfell Tower, but they're not getting everything wrong either. And it's hard from all I've picked up not to feel there's a council that actually hasn't served part of its community well. And now you're finding that community almost refusing to submit to whoever's placed over them. We can't have anyone just being appointed by anyone over us. A spirit-filled community will be a Christ-centered one. And the Christ who's at the center of us is the Christ who, you remember, did not count equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, made himself a nobody, became obedient to death, even death upon a cross. And I follow that Lord and refuse to submit and won't serve someone else. If you're children of light, walk as children of the light. It gets worked out across relationships. So many Bibles love these little subheadings they put in. Most of them don't really tell you anything very useful. Often they're a great distraction. This one sort of shows you as if the next verse has nothing to do with this one. It all carries on submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. And then it works out all in the same sentence about husbands and wives and parents and children and masters and slaves. Hey, any community that can make those relationships work, wow, that would be a community worth being part of. Be filled with the Spirit. Literally, go on being filled with the Spirit. I remember, well, it was that Butlin's red coat who said to me, Hugh, I need to go on being filled with the Spirit because I leak. That's a great line. Great thing every morning in your own devotions, why not just pray, Lord, please fill me again with your Spirit. You were darkness, now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light. Is it sex? Well, joy, not smut. Is it time? Wise, not foolish. Make the most of the opportunities. Is it life? Be Spirit-filled. Not wine drunk. I think today is a wonderful day for Sheffield. But James was right when he was talking earlier. It's a wonderful day, not really because of the bricks and mortar or whatever this is made of. It is exciting, the change of use, isn't it? You know, nightclub to church, darkness to light. It's a kind of God sense of humour. But don't spend too long chuckling about the building change of use. See, the real question is not the building moving from darkness to light, but people moving from darkness to light. If you've ever read the book of Nehemiah, about the one thing anyone knows about Nehemiah is that he built the walls around Jerusalem. But if you've ever read the book, you discover that the walls are built, done, dusted, finished before you get halfway through the book. The real battle is building the people of God who live within the walls. And the great thing about this building will not be the building, but the people inside it. The space now for more and more people to move from darkness to light. There's capacity for a community that can bring light to the city centre because you are light. Wherever you go. The building will be a waste. And your 600,000 will have gone down the drain if we don't live who we are. Walk as children of light. Make the best use of the time. And thank God. Amen.